Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lyle. Well, folks, the sun is shining a little brighter today because I still remain ahead of Rex in both of our fantasy leagues so far. However, he claims that he has cracked the code. Rex, let's get into this midweek podcast with yet another back surgery for Tiger Woods that was announced over the weekend. We don't know how. We don't know when. But Tiger Woods did have another procedure. It was a lumbar disc replacement. I thought it was notable in the Tiger Woods statement that was released on social media that he did not mention golf. He mentioned his body. He mentioned his health when talking about the need for this surgery. That's now 7 back surgeries, more than a dozen procedures overall, turns 50 in a couple of months. Where are you in the state of Tiger Woods after undergoing surgery yet again?
I think it was either ESPN or maybe Golf Digest. If I get it wrong, I apologize. But they did one of those really cool graphics that showed all of his surgeries all over all the years. It's, you know, it's just a picture of Tiger, and it's got all the footnotes on it. And it's dizzying to sit and look at that. I mean, it's horrifying.
A living, breathing operation game. Remember that game?
Yes. That's kind of what it feels like. It feels like he's an entire episode of House, simply because of everything that's had to be taken off of him. Everything's been cut out of him. Everything's put into him. I mean, it's amazing that he was able to do what he did now in retrospect in his career. When you and I got the email, I believe it was Monday morning, that we were going to be on a roundtable this week. It was Golf Central, which we have to wear suits and ties for, which apparently was news to you. We'll probably get into that later. But when we got the email, and our producer, Arthur Volpe, who's always very, very good at sort of laying things out, he didn't even have Tiger surgery in the original email. Now, I'm not saying that to pick on Volpe. It's because it's become such the norm, I think, is why I sort of let Volpe off the hook. Because, I mean, are we surprised by this? I mean, I think the only reason I was surprised is it was a late Friday night drop, and that seems a little out of character for him these days. He doesn't seem to care about when he does the news drop. The question we got asked was, when can we expect to see Tiger Woods again? And I kind of said it half jokingly, but in retrospect, maybe I didn't. He's closer to the PGA Tour champions than he is the PGA Tour. He turns 50 in December. By all accounts, we probably won't see him play certainly an official PGA Tour event until next year. And so are we talking about, is he going to play again on the PGA Tour? Or is he going to start his PGA Tour champions career? And I'm only saying that partly tongue in cheek, just because I think there's part of him that actually would be interested in playing with his buddies and playing 54 holes and tooling around in a golf cart. I think that might hold some appeal to him, much more so than stomping up and down the hills at Augusta National. Because I did read a couple of stories, and by all accounts, that this particular surgery has about a 6 to 8 week recovery period, which keeps, let's say, the PNC Championship, which he has played historically with his son here in Orlando, keeps that in play. Maybe even the Hero World Challenge, which is his event in the Bahamas. That's 72 holes. That's a little bit different of an animal. It keeps it in play, but I guess my curiosity is I'm less interested in this version of Tiger Woods as a player than I am about everything else. I'm curious, is he going to take on the Ryder Cup captaincy in 2 years when the U.S. tries to win it back, or tries to win it in Ireland? Or is he going to stick around as the PGA Tour sort of de facto commissioner now that we have a CEO, where he's in these meetings and making all these decisions as the tour moves into a new era? What is he going to be? Is he going to be that elder statesman that Jack Nicklaus took over, that Arnold Palmer took over later in their careers? Or is he really going to try to play again? I don't see how that happens, but I guess it's a possibility.
Yeah, as it relates to the injury time frame, I'm with you. I saw 6 to 8 weeks. I also saw 3 to 6 months, which would obviously not include the PNC Championship, which is in mid-December. That's also sort of like an able-bodied man with those projections, and not someone with Tiger's litany of surgical procedures that he now had. Keep in mind, he didn't play a tournament, Rex, in 2025 because of a completely separate issue with blowing out his Achilles. I was on the live from desk at the Players Championship when we got that drop. We all thought that, boy, maybe even Tiger was going to be playing in the Players Championship. Instead, has that procedure and was out for the year. Now we sat here in early October and said, okay, maybe we see Tiger at the PMC Championship. TGL has already gone out of its way to proclaim, I believe it's March 1st is the date for the Tiger-Rory TGL match. So there were clearly signs that he was at least ramping up for competition. We don't know how or why this latest issue popped up. Was he training for a comeback? Was he tying his shoes and his back went out and all of a sudden he has the collapsed disc that needs to be repaired? We don't know. As it relates to, like, when are we going to see him again, and is it going to be on the senior tour? I have a hard time imagining that he would not want to sort of at least try to get ready for the Masters. If it's clear that he only has a finite number of swings left in his brittle body, why would you quote unquote waste them on the over 50 circuit? Why not try and catch lightning in a bottle at the Masters? Why not try and catch lightning in a bottle at the Open Championship? St. Andrews is in 2027. Pebble Beach is in 2027. I still think there are enough carrots out there dangling for him to not want to quote unquote waste them on championships, on tournaments, on reps that are not going to do anything legacy wise. Like if you're going to play any tournament at all in 2026, it shouldn't be the US Senior Open. It should be the Masters.
You're making this into a zero-sum game, and I don't think that's the conversation that we should be having. Of course, the Masters is marked on his calendar as what he wants to ramp up and get ready for. That's always been the case, and even before he has gone through this most recent spite of injuries and surgeries and all the recoveries that he's gone through. I would say, and again, this is slightly tongue-in-cheek, that the PGA Tour Champions is on the table simply because I think he would enjoy it. He has voiced this before. If you would have asked me 15 years ago, Tiger Woods was never going to play on the senior circuit. Just wasn't in the cards. He had no interest for all the reasons you just pointed out. It's more about legacy for him than it is anything else. I think he's reached a point in his life, and we've seen it a lot lately when it comes to Tiger Woods, that he just kind of misses being out there. He misses being in the locker room. He misses being on the range.
I don't think he'd like tying for 30th, though. At the Boeing Classic.
I wouldn't anticipate that would last very long. And I wouldn't anticipate I would think it would be a very extremely limited schedule that he would play. Maybe two or three of their majors and maybe one or two others. He might play in Stricker's event. He might play in Furyk's event. Like, I think there might be just some friendship things going on there. But no, you're right. Of course, it's the Masters. And then beyond that, can he somehow get ready for the rest of the season's major championships? I think the point of the recovery, though, and you're right, I read kind of a couple of different things, and according to one trainer that I talked to, 6 to 8 weeks seems to be the right window, which would put that PNC, that hero, into play. It would be pushing it, and I don't think approaching 50 years old, someone who's gone through that many surgeries,
I know,
would want to push it. Probably the bigger thing that someone pointed out to me was it will have been more than 8 months since he had that Achilles repair, and that's probably the bigger issue right now when it comes to the golf swing.
It's dire out there, man. Like, Tiger didn't play at all in 2025. You look at what he did in 2024. He missed the cut in three majors. He was last among those who made the cut at the Masters. That's it, tournament-wise, over the past 2 years. That was before the Achilles. That was before another back issue. You know how the kinetic chain works. We've talked about this repeatedly. Like, it's only going to get worse. Long-term concerns, for sure, with a fused back, with a fused ankle as well. I'm with you. I think, you know, competitive wise, anything from here on out would be a bonus. I'm very intrigued to see if he sort of reemerges in a different way, in a leadership role, whether it be as captain of Team USA.
Hasn't he already done that though?
As a de facto, I'm saying being more front and center. We have not heard anything ever since Brian Rolapp announced the competition committee looking into the competitive model for the PGA Tour in the future, that which Tiger Woods is heading. Would certainly love to hear Tiger Woods outline his vision for what the PGA Tour competitive model should be. That's sort of what I'm talking about, just being a little bit more front-facing in those potential roles, and obviously the Ryder Cup captaincy looms largest among those. All right, we mentioned the Rory-Tiger TGL match. We do know at least one of those guys is teeing it up this week. It's Rory McIlroy, who's playing in the India Championship. Very interesting golf course at Delhi Golf Club. Rory was asked, you know, how many drivers does he think he's going to hit this week? And if you have not seen the images of this golf course, it is claustrophobic, to say the least. He said he does not think he's going to be hitting a driver until he plays in Abu Dhabi in a couple weeks the DP World Tour. And otherwise, he is, in other words, he is keeping it in the bag. Just an insanely tight, narrow golf course with very little reward for pushing it down further. Nonetheless, it should be an interesting watch to see how Rory does in a tournament. Obviously, he is playing for the very first time. When Rory met with reporters on Wednesday, he mentioned that he wants and he foresees his schedule, Rex, to be a little bit more international in nature moving forward. He's 36 years old. He's been a pro for nearly two decades at this point. You think the PGA Tour should be worried that we're going to continue to see less and less of Rory McIlroy, who is arguably the biggest star in the world right now?
I think the PGA Tour should be less worried in what they might, when we might see Rory McIlroy again, and more concerned or more focused on when we do see him, when he does show up at the PGA Tour, to make sure it's the best events against the best fields. And that's the idea of, I think, what Brian Rolapp, and you mentioned the competition committee, that's the focus of all this. And less is going to be more. I don't think we need to read too much into the tea leaves on that one. So create a schedule that compels Rory and the other top players to play more often. Or if not more often, then make sure when they do show up that these are the best events and the best markets during the best times of the year. I think that's the challenge for the PGA Tour. I did enjoy the conversation we had on the roundtable, again, on Golf Central, because you needed to wear a suit and tie. The idea that coming out of the Masters, and you and I spoke endlessly about this, about where does he find motivation now? Once you reach the top of the mountain, and he was really clear about, yes, this has been what I have been fixated on for the better part of a decade. This is where I wanted my career to land. If you wanted to draw an X on the map, it was going to be that spot at Augusta on that Sunday, walking up that hill to win his first green jacket and complete the career Grand Slam. Where do you go from here? It was a logical question. I think we're not the only ones who are asking. I think Rory was asking himself. We have seen now, we have a body of work that Ryder Cup still means the world to him. We saw how he performed. We saw the emotion. We saw everything he had to endure at Bethpage Black. I think we're going to continue to see it throughout the remainder of this year. Winning that money title, the points title on the DP World Tour is important to him. And so he still has things that motivate him, but I think you're right. I think the things that are probably going to motivate him are not the things right now that the PGA Tour is fixated on.
But I think that's a great point, where if your biggest star, and look, Rory is not Scotty. Scotty has made it abundantly clear that he prefers what's happening right now on the PGA Tour schedule, which is big money events against the very best fields located almost exclusively in the United States. He's starting a young family, and that's what he prefers at the moment. Rory, in a different stage of his career, in a different stage of his life, I guess you could say, finds it more appealing to go to places and finds it more exciting to go to places that he'd not previously been. He's sort of parroting what Roger Federer had told him a couple of years ago, where when Roger was sort of in the late career stages, he really got a lot of enjoyment and personal satisfaction of going and playing in Cincinnati or going and playing in Turkey, some tournament he had not played previously. That at that point of his career, when he'd done it for two decades, was something new, was something that is exciting. It was something that could get his competitive juices going. Rory McIlroy very clearly finds himself at a similar crossroads at this point. Is he going to find personal satisfaction teeing it up at the Truist Championship? Probably not. Is he going to find personal satisfaction teeing it up at the RBC Heritage? Clearly not. But if he plays in India, new country, experiences new things. If he goes to Australia at the end of this year, new country, experiences new things. That is all very appealing to him. I want to be very clear with this. Like, Rory's not doing this out of the kindness of his heart, that he's trying to spread the gospel of a game. He is a businessman. He is being paid handsomely to be playing this week at the India Championship, just as Brian Harman has gotten himself out of hunting season to play in India, just as Ben Griffin has left the States.
He's got a big game on Saturday
in India. He certainly does. I'm not sure what the time difference would be, but it's going to be very difficult for him to watch in the middle of the night in India. But I digress. And so Rory, among others, are at least sort of projecting an attitude of inclusion, that they are at least open to this idea, Rex. If the PGA Tour does become more international, more global, more worldwide in nature, that they would be up for it. Could it be at the expense of a Scottie Scheffler, who maybe wouldn't make 3 to 4 trips across the pond per year? I think that's certainly possible. But I do think if the money is right and the competition is right, if the golf course is right, if they could put on a big tournament in nature that would sort of be equivalent to a signature event, I really do think that these top players have signaled that they would be up for that.
I think so too. And Roy has talked about the idea, just not, and I do like the concept of let me go to places that I've never been before. This kind of harkens to another generation, to the Gary players of that generation who wanted their games to travel, who wanted to take the game to parts of the globe that probably wouldn't have seen the world's top players. Roy has also been really open about wanting to win national championships. When he won the Canadian Open, that was a big deal to him. That was a milestone. When he won the Scottish Open, that was a big deal to him. And I think when you look, this is a broader PGA Tour conversation, that the signature events that the tour is locked into right now may not be the way to go on that future. If you really want to make this a global schedule with all of the best players going to the best markets, it's going to have to include at least a handful of those national opens, whether that be the Scottish or the Canadian or whatever the case may be. Certainly the Australian would factor into that as well. It remains to be seen, because I think there's probably more Scottie Schefflers on the PGA Tour than there are Rory McIlroys, at least right now. Now, the tour could probably change that narrative based on how you wanted to create the schedule and what events you deemed to be important. But right now, I think the players would be a little reluctant. But if you did it right, you could probably pull it off.
Yeah, and I think when you look at sort of the fall schedule and what the PGA Tour is doing with this, essentially this elongated Q school to either lock up the 51 through 60 in the signature events or the top 100 to be fully exempt or the top 101 to 125 for conditional status. Like, that's sort of its own obstacle. And I would almost put that as like the Korn Ferry Tour plus. What I still think there's with the untapped potential is the fall for the big name PGA Tour players and potentially incorporating more with the DP World Tour. Like, there's a host of tournaments that have gotten really good fields. And obviously there, some of those are benefited and boosted by appearance fees. But I mean, boy, the Spanish Open, the Irish Open, BMW PGA, Dunhill Links, this week in India, you still have Abu Dhabi and Dubai out on the horizon, Australia. Like, there are a host of tournaments, Rex, that are very appealing to top players in that window from September through December, which the PGA Tour, I think, rightly has said that they do not want to compete head-to-head with the NFL and college football. I think that is very smart. However, if you sort of zoom out and if you go international, if you go worldwide, if you go global in nature, technically you wouldn't be competing with the NFL if those were big money events that are incorporated into the PGA Tour schedule. Those tournaments are all ending right around 1 o'clock Eastern time, right when the NFL slate is kicking off. Are viewership numbers going to be commensurate with what you would see on a Sunday in July? No, you're not going to get those numbers, but you can tap into other regions. You can tap into other markets. You can still appease sponsors who want to be a part of the PGA Tour umbrella. I really do think if the PGA Tour and Brian Rolup determines that January through August can be elongated throughout the calendar year once again, I think the only option is to go global in the fall because, you're not directly competing against the NFL and the college football behemoth. You're actually preempting it, which I think could be a pretty good selling point.
That not entirely true, and I'm a huge fan of the NFL Sunday game. Certainly your Jaguars seem to spend more time in London than they do in Jacksonville at your beloved stadium. However, I would argue that, yes, there are plenty of opportunities in the fall for the tour to cross-pollinate with the DP World Tour, the strategic partner, and we're seeing it. I mean, there's a program now called the Back Nine, which essentially allows the top PGA Tour players entry into these final nine events on the DP World Tour, and we're seeing sort of sprinklings of it. I think we'll see probably more of it as they get closer to their playoffs in the Middle East. However, this cannot come in addition to whatever the schedule is going to be, I guess would be my argument. If it's going to be a 25-event schedule, it probably needs to include whatever these events are as well.
Sure.
You're absolutely right that there's a handful of them that just would fit in perfectly, whether if you wanted to make the Dunhill or the BMW PGA or any of these other big events that they have on the European tour, but it's not going to be in addition to, because as we see right now, we had a handful. Xander Schauffele played last week in Japan. My guess is we don't see Xander again, at least until the Hero World Challenge in December. These players want to be done. They're tired. They played in Napa. The top players did. They played in Napa to get ready for the Ryder Cup. Then you had the Ryder Cup. Scottie Scheffler has no interest in coming out of that cave, at least until we get to December. And most top players probably feel the same way.
But they're tired because they started on January 1.
Yes.
If all of a sudden the season is delayed, where again, you're not competing directly against football because the West Coast events on the PGA Tour are competing against, that'd be like wild card weekend, divisional weekend, conference championship weekend, as you get through the end of January, like you're still competing head to head. If all of a sudden you're delaying the start of the PGA Tour schedule by a month, maybe a month and a half, all of a sudden I think there's a little bit more room to breathe, and maybe you don't have quite the fatigue that you see from a lot of the players right now, which I think is an accurate point. Like Scottie Scheffler's not getting off the couch until he defends his title once again at the Hero World Challenge. I just think it's an interesting exercise and something very interesting to think about, because I do think there's an appetite for some of them, maybe not all of them, but there's so many great tournaments that are not just relegated to the PGA Tour. I think that's what I want to go.
Observation and a question real quick. First, do your seats include a seat at Wembley Stadium when the Jaguars are overseas? And is it for both of you, or does it include camp seats as well?
We have access. We have access to purchase those seats. Thank you for asking, with the trial ticket.
Sure. And then just a comment. I would argue, and I'm hearing from multiple sources, that the Century probably isn't going to be played next year, that you're probably going to start the year. I think officials are starting to tell players, plan on starting your year if you want to at the Sony Open, which means that they either couldn't find a home or didn't have a lot of motivation to find a home for the Century. Of course, that golf course has endured drought and it simply wasn't playable. It could be a way to set a standard to show players that maybe it's better if we don't start at least those signature events season until maybe we get to Pebble Beach or LA.
Would be an interesting field if that were the case. And thank you for dropping that news nugget at the 22-minute mark of this midweek podcast, going all the way out to Hawaii to potentially miss the cut. That's going to be a very hard sell for players, but obviously if there's a tournament, they will come. Real quick, Xander Schauffele ended what was a largely disappointing 2025 season with a win at Japan, at the Bay Current, edging out Max Grazerman, who once again was a runner-up on the PGA Tour. I continue to be impressed with his resilience and how he plays in those final groups. It's not like he's, you know, squandering his opportunities. He's playing well, and more often than not is getting beat. Some serious Cameron Young vibes from the way Max Grazerman is going about his business in the final rounds of these close calls on the PGA Tour. What do you think, Rex, as you sort of zoom out on Xander 2025 at large and sort of where he is at the moment? You think this year was an aberration? Was there anything sort of troubling about the way that he plays and thinking that he came back to his, you know, he's technically number three in the official world golf ranking. Do you think he can actually play up to that standard again?
Is there anything I could possibly say that you wouldn't make him your player of the year candidate going into next season? Is there any words that could come out of my mouth that would persuade you not to do it again?
If you broke news that Scottie Scheffler had injured his other hand in a Halloween mishap, if he was carving a pumpkin and suffered an injury that was going to set him back, yes, I would be back on the train that Xander Schauffele is going to be the player of the year in 2026.
I think you and I both agreed when we talked about this on Golf Central this week, the idea that there are signs towards the end of the season. And if you really want to look at Xander's season as a case study, this is how injury affects a top player in the game. Not necessarily the injury in and of itself, because my guess is by the time he got to the U.S. Open, certainly by the time he got to the Open Championship, the injury itself had subsided. That you're not playing with pain, you're not playing with discomfort anymore. This is all about how you prepare for a season, the things you do to make sure you can play your best at these incremental moments in the season, all the things that Scottie Scheffler does so well. When you look at Xander's year and you zoom out to 30,000 feet, started the season with an injury. It's a rib injury. Those things are nagging. You never really feel right for quite a while. And you see how it set him back, not just with his swing. It was really his putting towards the end of the year that was such an issue. And you could also see when he kind of started to turn the corner. And I would argue when going into the playoffs, he didn't do a whole lot. But you look at what he did with top 10 finishes at the Scottish Open and the Open Championship, I would argue he was one of the bright spots, few bright spots for the U.S. team. Beth Page. Well, he was one of three players with a winning record. I think J.J. Spahn certainly had a good week. You would look at what he was able to do. I think the things that we saw out of Xander towards the end of this year, look at what he did in Japan with that win. You're right. It was a gutsy win against Max. All of those things signal that this was very much an outlier. This was a one-off for Xander Schauffele. Not sure I'm going to pick him to be my player of the year going into next year, but I think he's right now the world's third best player according to the World Golf Ranking, and that seems about right based on what he's accomplished in his career and the potential that he still has.
I mean, he's just such a talented player. He's such a complete player. He's such an all-around player that it's easy to dismiss 2025 as an outlier. Like, you look at what he did in 2024, winning a pair of major championships. He was top 45, Rex, in every major statistical category. Even Scottie Scheffler, the player of the year, was not that. Like, I think he's just such a high-class player that when you look at his best finishes in 2025, I'm talking about Xander Schauffele, like, they came in the Masters. They came in the Open Championship. The best of the best, the most grueling test, the most taxing on your body, the most taxing on your mind, the most taxing on your swing, and he held up and performed the best. He's just such a high-class player that I think with now this essentially this three-month reset, you know, make sure his swing is on track with Chris Como. Make sure his putting, which was, I think, 130th on the PGA Tour this year, that is an outlier. That is an anomaly from what he typically does week in and week out on the PGA Tour. Make sure his body, remember, it was his body that he admittedly got a little bit lazy with during the offseason, which is what was the root of the issue with the rib, sort of staying on top of his body now that he is in his age 32 season. I think all of that is going to be very, very interesting. You do bring up a point too, Rex, that I wanted to get into. And I think I have like football brain rot where, you know, I play a lot of fantasy football and I've got a lot of guys on my team. And if they suffer an injury, right? Let's say they have a sprained knee or a sprained foot, or they have an AC joint with their shoulder, and they miss 2 or 3 weeks and then they come back. And it's just sort of this expectation that how you were playing going into that injury, at least in football, you typically can carry that out. You come through the injury fine and you get back to how you were. In golf, I think Xander Schauffele's injury this season was a reminder that golf swings are like living, breathing organisms. They're always evolving. They're always changing. Just because Xander Schauffele was playing great heading into the injury doesn't necessarily mean he's going to play great coming out of it. Golf swings are so much more technical. They're so much more precise. They're so much more reliant on timing, similar to a baseball swing, obviously, than what a football player or a basketball player who's just getting on back on the hardwood or getting in between the white lines and going out and performing his craft. We saw it with Scottie Scheffler, who took him a while to get going. We saw it with Xander Schauffele. It took him a while to get going. We've seen it in the past with Rory McIlroy when he had that backslash rib issue pop up. It took him a while to get going and to get settled. And so I think it was a good reminder, at least for me personally, like, giving these guys grace post-injury, it just takes a little bit of time. And you either have to get really lucky or you have to just be insanely good to pick up right where you left off and hit the ground running post-injury. I think this year, Xander Schauffele 2025 is a good reminder of that.
And I keep, every time we have a conversation like this, I always go back to Harris English, who had hip surgery. Yep. And was able to rebound, not just in a way that was impressive. He came out of the hip surgery, and I think you and I both would agree, he's a much better player now than he was before those surgeries. And you get an idea.
That's a year and a half removed. A year and a half removed from that procedure.
Like, it took him a long time. You talked to Justin Parsons, his swing coach. You talked to Randy Myers. All of the people in Harris's camp talk about how hard he had to work to come back from that surgery, but just not come back. He's a better player now than he was before. I would argue that's the outlier in this conversation, because very rarely do players have the ability to do that.
Yeah. Billy Horschel is on my son's
baseball
sling baseball team. He is just coming off hip surgery. He just returned to competition at the Dunhill and played last week in Japan. He's going to be playing next week as well in Utah. And I asked him how his body feels. Body feels great. How's the swing feel? Swing does not feel how it did. It is brand new. Same body, same swing. It might look very similar on camera, but the motions, the feels, the technique are all just a little bit different. I think that was a good reminder of that this year. Rex, we were supposed to keep this at 20 minutes, but although I do think the fans actually enjoy these weekly recaps that we give them. We haven't done this in a while. Anything you've been putting on the grill that you're particularly proud of?
Well, having been home last week for the first time in quite a while, I had a lot on the grill, to be honest with you. So I smoked a pork butt on Saturday because that's the best way to spend Saturday on my back porch watching football and smoking a pork butt. And then next week, I think I've finally been talked into trying to do a brisket. My middle son, Trevor, as we reference.
Daunting. A daunting task.
I don't think he understands that a pork butt is 4 or 5 hours of labor on the back porch. That's a labor of love. I can sit and watch football and drink a couple beers. I mean, a brisket is like a full-time job, it feels like.
It is a full-time job. You also don't have a pellet grill, despite my insistence that you should get one, because you could do it overnight and obviously cut, I don't know, what, 10 hours, 9, 10 hours off of that cook by not even paying attention to it. Yes, I wish you good luck. The trim for a brisket is incredibly important. I'm not sure if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I'm a Jags season ticket holder. And one thing that we are doing this year that is different besides getting child tickets, shout out to Mike and the Jags ticket department for the heads up on that one, is we do these tailored tailgate spreads where whoever the Jags opponents are, we try and, you know, pay homage, pay tribute to that team's location. So for instance, the Jags played Carolina Panthers in week one. Typically, in standard fashion, we did Carolina barbecue. Last week, Seattle Seahawks came to town. We didn't want to have cod. We didn't have salmon. That'd be lame. We could have done some fish dips. A couple friends did bring some fish dips. But what we did, Rex, was a seafood boil. Yes, folks, this was just my way of getting into the seafood boil that I did. Did I color outside the lines by making this a Cajun flavored seafood boil? Certainly. Yes.
As someone that lived in Seattle
flavor. But it's seafood. All right. The whole point, Rex, is that it's seafood that we are tailoring to these folks. Yes, yes. Look at that wonderful spread. Crab legs.
It looks delicious.
Corn, potatoes, shrimp, veggies. Here's my six-year-old son, who again, shout out Mike, now comes to the games, was loving it, absolutely loves crab legs. We had a great time. I love tailgating, Rex. I don't know about you. I know UCF is pitiful. It's down bad.
Hey,
you're suffering from another case of frostbite. But to me, tailgating, getting ready for the tailgate, thinking about the tailgate, preparing for the tailgate, cooking at the tailgate, like to me, that's almost as much fun as the actual game themselves.
There is something to be said for it. And I think UCF is a very underrated school to go watch a football game. Now, the stadium, the bounce house is on campus. The quad is full. It's always fun. It's a lively atmosphere. It's not Athens. I will give you that. Apparently, it's not. What's the name of the stadium that's not in London that's the home stadium for your team?
Wembley?
No, the one that's not in London. So something Bank Stadium. Whatever the name.
Everbank.
Yeah, that's it. It looks like it's a good time. So, but no, I don't think it was an unnecessary shot from UCF.
Good luck to UCF this week. Whatever pitiful patsy they're playing this week. Obviously, Georgia has Ole Miss. My mood in next week's podcast will be determined by the outcome of that game. All right. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. You guys are the drill. In the meantime, NBCSports.com/golf, a.k.a. the soon-to-be relaunched golfchannel.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys.
What is that? We're going to